Emer's good at identifying the space or the gap for herself and picking out a few mismatches. And like she was
going herself and not passing.
Kicking the ball away then. If she's taking everything out of the ball, she's not going to score. She'll kick it.
She did look to pass in fairness, and she was like a dummy pass.
It's she
like,
was never so passing no, that no, ball. No, you're joking me.
No, don't you worry, we'll keep her feet right in the ground today.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. No Emer today as she's off on Six Nations duty and she's flying a two after two tries yesterday. So you're stuck with myself, Chris Henry and Ian Madigan, who's just also fresh off a quarterfinal win yesterday. How are you, lads?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, great, thanks for
all good. We'll be joined by Leinster and Ireland star Michelle Claffey later to talk about the Women's Six Nations. But first, Pat has given us a good topic to kick off the show. It's about who your maddest teammate was throughout your playing days.
Yeah.
Do you have any?
Geez, there's plenty of names for me, to be honest. I think every good team needs to have a few mad headers in your team. But the obvious one for me was Neil Best. You know, a fan favourite at Ulster and Ireland. And the reason why I felt he was the obvious choice was when Neil was coming up at Ulster, he didn't come through like a typical rugby school. He had to go the hard way and was playing for Malone Rugby Club and was playing so well that Ulster decided we have to bring this guy in for a trial. So he came in for about, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks, and literally every training session, he just kicked the crap out of everyone. You know, whenever there was no contact, he didn't know what no contact was. He was just smashing boys. And eventually, Mark McCall, you know, everyone was going, right, we have to give this guy a contract because he's too good. So obviously went on, played, you know, every time he played for Ulster in Ireland, no regard for his own body. The fans loved him. But the other story about Neil I always loved and remembered was when we played in the Churchill Cup in Denver, Colorado. Mm. We won the Churchill Stag, it was called then. He was the captain of that team. Mm. And Churchill Stag, it was a relaxed tournament, but we had a really good team out. And Bestie the night before we played England Saxons, he also had a good team. You know, he had us all fired up, you know, pumped up to play this English team. But the final words he said before he went out to play was, "And look, lads, no matter what happens, win or lose, we're always going to booze." And you know, for pre-game, for such a big game, for him to pull that off, and it motivated us all. And luckily, we won, and we were able to enjoy our summer break. But Neil Best, like, what a guy, just an absolute header, but brilliant teammate.
Oh, I fully backed that up. He was a mental individual, but geez, what a guy to have in your team as well. I remember that speech vividly because I think he was playing in Northampton at the time, and he was just telling how English don't respect us and this and that. But then obviously, win or lose, boys, on the booze. It was just like people pissing themselves laughing at the end of it. How about you, mads?
Yeah, I don't know about maddest, but like Lukey Fitz was always someone who I love sharing the dressing room with. He's, you know, kind of guy, put himself head first into anything. I remember kind of early on in his career, he was obsessed with like PlayStation, and you know, just, you know, once training would end, he'd be rushing back straight on the controller, smashing it out.
I remember he was turning up late for sessions and stuff.
PlayStation, jeez.
Or else like he'd come in absolutely wrecked because he was up all night playing it, you know, online.
Yeah, it was funny. I actually heard a good story during the week. Apparently Cowan Dickey is unbelievably good at Call of Duty.
He's
like live Call of Duty or whatever. But it's very competitive, it's very dynamic, like it's changing all the time. So he's mainly competing against like Americans. So while he'd be off training, you know, the Americans are like, catching up with him. So he's like rushing back, literally in his boots, you know,
scrummaging,
trying to catch him back up. Then he goes to bed, the Americans catch back up with him. It's just like this cat and mouse game. But
I'd have to say probably Mike McCarthy was up there for me.
Oh, big just, time, yeah.
What a great teammate, but what a hilarious guy to have around the place. You didn't know whether you're going out for coffee with him or like he was just going to do something funny. I remember one time we were both doing a bit of punditry up in Aviva, had this fan kind of studio place up in one of the corporate boxes. The idea was it was like a virtual chat, but there was also fans in there watching, and I was being asked a question and I was just answering. It was on like the first half or something like that. was halfway through my answer, and next thing, Mike just smashes me to the ground in a tackle, and he starts going, "Release, release," to my microphone standing over me, and I'm on the ground. And everyone's just looking, going, "What is going on here?" Then he stands up and he starts acting completely normal. They ask him a question. He gives this beautiful, articulate, like perfectly spoken answer. I'm just going, you can't just turn into that person and then be this person as well. But
no boundaries.
What a gas character he was. Great guy. We'll move on into the rugby now stuff on that Exeter-Leinster game. Obviously, a brilliant win for Leinster over in Sandy Park. We all know how tough a place that is to go, but you know, just how impressive was that victory for you?
Yeah, for me, it was exactly what European rugby was about. To go away to play such a formidable team like Exeter, who have come from, their journey's been incredible as well. But I think for the most impressive thing for me is, obviously, Exeter had such a fast start, got two quick tries, where Leinster, the defence, definitely, there was a few slipped off tackles, the line integrity was a bit disjointed, which isn't like Leinster, but it was the calmness and coolness for Leinster to, basically problem solve and go, right, well, we know we get back to our game plan, we get into this game, we've weathered this quick start from Exeter, which they expected. And then the Leinster dominance was just incredible. Getting back to what they're good at. And that is despite having Johnny Sexton coming off, their talisman coming off so early in the game. I think maybe 25, 26 minutes he came off. So for Ross Byrne to come in, so there's a disjoint in this. But the team just, as usual, just the system just keeps working, keeps chugging on. I mean, some unbelievably outstanding performances. Robbie Henshaw, man of the match. As usual, I think in the last two or three months, it's always been he's getting man of the match. But for me, it was the dominance of that Leinster back row again. It's a beautifully well balanced back row of Jack Conan, Reece Ruddock. Every time they're getting gain lines, which they shouldn't deserve.
And Josh van der Fleer, I think it was 22 tackles, two turnovers at the ground. He's always been really good on the ground, but particularly towards the tail end of the Six Nations and that Leinster game, and also the game against Munster, it's phenomenal some of the work he's doing on the ground there.
Yeah, it's also as well, I've played with Josh and played against him now, and he would be a guy who I think, look, he's going to make a load of tackles, he's going to get over the ball well, but over the last kind of couple of months, his carrying game has come on a huge amount. He's starting to beat defenders, and Leinster are really good at that, just finding soft shoulders, just creeping over the gain line, and it's very difficult defending against that. You feel like it's just this non-stop wave coming at you. And Exeter really struggled to win the game line as the game went on.
Yeah. And the Van der Flower thing, I heard that the whole change-up, the sort of slight change for him has been he's been working with the coaches, doing a wee bit extra in training. And I remember when I was playing, trying to fix aspects of your game, especially ball carrying, that's not that simple. You're not just... doesn't just happen that easily. So for him to actually, whether it's been a mindset change for him, whether he really wants the ball more, but his carrying has been outstanding. That obviously wasn't his talking point. So yeah, I just think that the Leinster team yesterday, just unbelievably impressive, and that any team that's going to beat them moving forward are going to have to play unbelievably well, because the game plan they have, you don't know how to stop them. They've got everything. They've got such power throughout, but they've got smart decision makers, and there's a confidence obviously in that a team from what they've done. So it was an absolutely cracking game to watch.
It was a brilliant
It was a tricky fixture as well, with obviously Gary injured, James Ryan injured, they were missing some key guys.
Dan Levy
obviously, but hopefully they'll get even Caelan Dorris,
Jameson Gibson Park.
It's
Will Connors.
It's going to be interesting now. I think is there maybe a month gap till the semi-final. You could get Gary back in, James Ryan back in, and you're going to have some fierce competitiveness within that team to get a starting spot.
Yeah, I actually think the most impressive thing about it was, so yeah, first 10 minutes they go down 14-0, and really, if you're watching the game and probably you're not really looking at the detail of what's happening and what the teams are doing, you're thinking, geez, it's going to be a long day at the office for Leinster. But if you actually look back at it, so the Tom O'Flaherty first try, it's off a it was a good launch, it was a good set piece, but there was a couple of missed tackles. He goes through, scores. Then the second one, they put a couple of phases together, And I think it was O'Flaherty again who just spotted that Tadhg Furlong was in the line and Jordan was outside him and just took him the outside and managed to get over again. But really, throughout the game, like when they went through any multi-phase play, they were never getting over the gain line, I didn't think. Yeah. And they were never really threatened once Leinster settled into the match. So think about it, they're 14-0 down over in Sandy Park. I don't know how many other teams in Europe, regardless of a crowd not being there, are going to be able to stay that composed and do what they did, because none of them panicked in any way. And once they started getting into their... I think the biggest difference, actually, looking at the two teams is, and I really respect Exeter, I think they're a brilliant, brilliant team, but from being coached under Stewart and seeing the difference team, like other great teams Leinster come up against these days, and the biggest difference, it's when, one, it's the ruck speed. So I did think Leinster ruck speed is a small bit faster. But when the nine gets there from Leinster, he just throws the ball. He doesn't wait and look. And Stewart coaches that into the players. He says, run the line to the forwards. So they're just running, they're pounding onto the ball, expecting it to be there really quick. And you can see that. That 80% of the time they're winning those collisions and getting over the gain line. Whereas you could see with Maunder, the Exeter nine, he's kind of waiting sometimes and seeing team where the 10 is. And that's a huge, like that split second or half a second is a huge amount of time for a line, for a difference between, you know, smashing someone behind or them just getting over the gain line. And I think that you could see that unfold throughout the game as well. Just so many more opportunities were presenting themselves because that Exeter defensive line was so much more stressed.
Yeah, like every half second on a rugby pitch is huge. Like the difference between, as you said, 2 second quick ball or 2.5 second. It's the difference between being able to talk to someone inside or outside. You get a bit of confidence, a slight adjustment, taking 2 steps further out or 2 steps tighter to the ruck, and that has a massive impact on the quality of tackle you're going to be making, and you know how impactful you're going to be in that. And that was something that Leinster did, you know, incredibly well throughout the game, and allows them to win those contacts.
Yeah, obviously James Lowe, who seemed to be much more comfortable as well, being back in the blue shirt. Hugh Keenan again had some really big moments, but out of all, you could obviously the attack was so good from Leinster, and as you said, the front football, the forwards were able to generate for them. But I think sorting out their defence obviously was probably the biggest, the obvious turning point, because it was unlike Leinster to let those two tries go through so easily. Like it wasn't like Exeter really, yes, there's a bit of deception, it wasn't that incredible attack from them. So
they hadn't seen before.
So I think that was the biggest thing, that they went, right, okay, we're down, we've been here before. And as I said, especially with Johnny Sexton coming off, I don't think that can be underestimated. Ross Byrne came on and as usual, he's just a cool, calm operator. You know, I've never met the guy, but he just comes across as being so much confidence coming from him. And obviously the rest of the players have a lot of faith in him. So for him then to orchestrate the play...
Like it was a seamless change when he came in, you know. Yeah. And from an outsider there, you're going, "Oh, Johnny Sexton's coming off. Geez, you know, Exeter's tails would be up." But it was seamless when Ross came in. But I think Ross has done that for a number of seasons now. Whether he's starting, and Johnny's not in, or he comes on for Johnny, really calm guy, really like great professional, really prepared, very like Johnny in lots of ways. But you could see even from his place kicking. Knocked over 2 tough kicks over there. Looked like it was windy. You know, big kicks as well. So I was delighted for him because, listen, it was probably a mixed Six Nations for him. But then obviously you mentioned James Lowe, another guy getting a lot of stick. He really stood up yesterday. You know, they're extremely good back three in Exeter. Like, that's one of their strong points. And I did think Hugo Keenan probably... granted, he did miss that tackle, but I thought he outplayed Stuart Hogg. Like, he drew him in for Jordan Larmer's first try, and then the second try,
James,
you know,
Lowe's first try, yeah.
And then the second try for Jordan, like, I think Stuart Hogg probably needs to make that tackle. I think that I think that Hugo Keenan is putting himself in a strong position to be a bolter for the Lions. That's what I think. Anyway, I don't know what you guys, but
yeah, it strikes me when I'm watching teams defending him, they don't realise how quick he is. He's deceptively quick. Like, I'm not saying he's a slouch or anything like that, but whatever way he moves, you could see that, you know, for the second try, Hogg is unsure if his winger's going to get him. Hmm. Just puts him in two minds. As it unfolds and you pause it, you go, "Oh, the winger would have got him." Hmm. But because he's moving at such speed, Hogg has to check for a split second, then he delivers the pass at the last seconds of the wing, and it's a try. If you don't have that top-end speed, they're going to defend that easily and possibly bundle you into touch.
Yeah, definitely. And I think another player that probably people don't talk about much, and he's gotten a few opportunities because Gary was injured, but Rory O'Loughlin, you know, I thought that he had a brilliant game. He really did. I thought he was probably a little bit of an unsung hero in the back line there amongst the stars of the back line. Obviously, Robbie gets man of the match, but he had a great game. Probably a little bit unlucky with that try at the very end. He did his little Ray Houghton monkey roll as well after he scored. But it's delighted for him because, you know, he's a brilliant player, and any time he's gotten opportunities in bigger matches.
Yeah, he's shown good mental strength. Like, he missed a tackle, I think, one of the earlier tries. I think that one with Tighe, he's on the outside of it, doesn't quite get the guy down. Was that right, or was it Larmer? I think, anyway, he's made a mistake in my book at the start of the game. It hasn't flustered him at all. It's a big European game. They've gone behind. He's just stuck to his process and pulled out a really good performance.
Yeah, and I think, like, you look at that game, and then you look at, you know, what Ulster did over Northampton. And I've kind of heard people that play in the Premiership, a couple of guys, I know Dan Bigger said it actually, that's just different, you know, it's a different level, the Aviva Premiership or the Gallagher Premiership in comparison to Pro 14. But when you look at what Ulster did, and I thought Ulster, you know, it was a good performance, it wasn't their best performance in the past while, and they beat them comfortably. And what Leinster then did to Exeter, the supposed best team over there, they could have beaten them by a bit more there. That last try would have been what? More than or in around 20 points.
So,
you know, they're dispatching, you know, good teams, some of the best teams, quite easily. See it, like I think the better teams in the Pro 14 are a fair bit ahead of the Gallagher Premiership teams. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's close. I think definitely on our day. I think what their argument is, and where they have their issue is leading into Europe. So let's say the standard competition where you go two games back to your league, two games. They think that the Pro 14 teams get a breather, you know, and we do. The reality is if we're playing an Italian team or, you know, a weakened Scottish or Welsh side, we can rotate our squads. In the Premiership, you don't have that luxury. Every week, it's a really tough game. Number 12 can beat number one and vice versa. There's so many different derby games, and
there's more level playing field. What I'm trying to say is, I think
it's the physical nature.
I think the top teams, when the top teams in one or the other, seem to come up against you the last number of years. Granted, Saracens are gone; they're not the same outfit they used to be. But take them aside, which is what is going on at the moment. I feel the better teams, the Pro 14, are ahead, well ahead.
And probably because you've been involved with Leinster for so long that yes, the top, like, you're obviously coming with such a Leinster mind space that yes, Leinster is so far ahead. I guess it's just the drop off. It would be quite significant, I guess, in the bottom four teams compared to the bottom four teams in the Premiership. But it's so hard to compare. And apart from Europe, like, Europe is our chance to put all the teams in a big melting pot and go. But as you said, it's the lead into those games and using the advantage in that regards. But I mean, maybe the style of play. I mean, you obviously played in the Premiership. We never did. So, I mean, the style of play, they're saying more physical every week to week. I obviously don't know, but I think we're blessed to have, you know, the top teams in both competitions are pretty impressive, you know. So I don't know. It's hard. It is a hard one to compare.
It is a hard one. I suppose I'm just fighting the Pro 14 corner.
Yeah, no, look.
I mean, let's be honest, it was nice to see. It was great to see Bigger coming out. You know, fair play to him, speaking what he, if that's what he thinks, great. It's also great to see that, okay, well.
Exactly, the proof's in the pudding. Like,
exactly.
You know, the results are there.
Yeah.
But just quickly touching back on a couple of the.
No, just on the Pro 14, though, like, we've got to look back to last weekend as well. And the Pro 14 had a very bad weekend in the last 16 of the competition. Like, Scarlets were hockey by sale.
Yeah.
You know, Newcastle beat Ospreys, Cardiff were beaten by London Irish, you know, Munster were beaten by Toulouse, which is slightly different. But it was, and it's been a bad year for the Pro 14. There's no two ways about it. If you look at both conferences, the gap between the top two or three teams down to the bottom two or three teams in each conference, the gap is too big.
Well, there is a big gap in the Pro 14. I'm not
No, but
getting,
it devalues the competition. If you look at the Premiership or the top 14, it's much more compacted in the middle section you know, and you'll find as the season's going on, every team has something to play for. And that didn't happen in the Pro 14. And I hope that this was the year that maybe the Pro 14 did hit rock bottom. And next year with the South African teams coming in, you know, the Welsh teams are very much back on the up. Mm. Likewise with the Scottish teams. Hopefully the Italian teams can find something and improve. But there's no getting away from it. It was a poor year for the Pro 14.
Yeah, it probably was. Just quickly touching back on a couple of head-to-heads from that Leinster game before we kind of move on into a few of the other matches. So, like, Ronan Keller, for instance, was starting at hooker yesterday against Luke Cowan-Dickie. And, you know, a lot of people have talked about Cowan-Dickie getting in ahead of Jamie George with England. And he obviously playing, you know, for quite a number of seasons very well for Exeter. How do you feel that matchup went, if you're Gatland looking at how things went?
Well, I mean, as a neutral, I think Ronan came out on top, you know, really do. You know, you think of the things that are going to be important down in South Africa, the scrum, line-out, you know, Keller's maybe some key line-outs in past games hasn't gone as well for him, but, you know, he's obviously, you know, improved, I think, a lot in that, in the big stage. So I thought that went really well for him yesterday, and obviously his ball carrying. So, look, is he going to get to go in the Lions? I'm not sure. I'm sure he'll be told that, you know, it could be a case where you're put on standby. You know, someone like him to come down to add something would be brilliant. But there obviously are, if you're not starting for your test team in the Six Nations, it does make it harder. But look, Cowan-Dickie, I don't think he would have come off that pitch, you know, slightly disappointed, thinking he could have done more. And especially now that Exeter are out, well, now Roland's going to be in the shop window again for, well, hopefully two more games, but at least one more game, which obviously gives him another chance. So I think he will be, you know, at home today, you know, delighted in what he did, and don't think he could have done too much more. Is obviously his ball carrying is, you know, the point of difference in what he brings. His change up, he's a really tidy, good player. But, you know, there's obviously a lot of other good hookers out there who are starting for each of their countries, and that could be
Yeah, as you say, he's a good chance, you know, if he can keep that up. And
it wouldn't be unthinkable that they could both go, you know. I think Ken Owens is pretty much nailed on from his Six Nations performance, coming from the winning side. Gatland knows him well. But I think having, you know, Kelleher and Cowan-Dickie would be two great options as well.
Yeah, I mean, but I still think, you know, someone who's going quietly under the radar, which is a bit ridiculous, is Rob Herring. You know, Rob has learned from Rob's first season line-out has been outstanding. You know, his throwing is top class.
Do you still have your Ulster jersey on?
Of course, I'm always
about to. We're both having on here.
Underneath that jacket, right?
So I'm about to start talking about his scrum work. Give me a second.
It's something you know loads about.
But he started for the Six Nations for Ireland. You know, there's a reason why they see that in him. And he's learnt off Rory. Like, Rob Herring has had to play second fiddle to Rory Best, who's been Ireland's best hooker, you know, for such a long time, and Rob Herring has had to buy his time, and he's learned from him. So I'm not going to pretend like I know what's going on in the scrum, but from what I've heard from other props and other front rowers, or from guys play beside him, Rob Herring in the scrum and in set piece adds something. Now, yes, there's no doubt the Keller's ball carrying is fantastic, but you can't go away from someone who's starting for their.
And agree with you. It's hooker is a position that's up for grabs on that tour, and he could well, because he was starting. And then another one was, you know, Robbie Henshaw gets asked after the game, he gets asked a question about the Lions. His answer was, "I'm just happy to be playing rugby and injury free." Like, if that doesn't sum him up, you know, that just sums Robbie up really, you know, with the way he's played.
Yeah, humble guy.
Yeah, the way he's played, and you say another man of the match performance, but you know, please God, he just stays fit now, because you got to think he's just nailed down for that 12 jersey.
Very much so, yeah. It's just about who's going to be playing with them, I think, is the question.
Yeah, for sure. And then, obviously, La Rochelle dispatched Sale, and we just heard before we came on air there that Leinster are going to be playing them over in La Rochelle, which is, it's going to be a difficult game going over there, you know, even with no crowd, you know, proud French side, they've improved. What do you make of that draw?
Yeah, so, like, obviously La Rochelle away is going to be tough. It's a brilliant fixture with, obviously, Rog, head coach.
John O'Gibbs, ex-Leinster.
John O'Gibbs too. I just think that from watching La Rochelle v Sale, you see how great start on them. And I actually watched or listened to Emer's interview with Rog a few months ago, and obviously the mindset of Rog is very much keeping the ball alive and pass accuracy and running straight. And it was actually Sale that I thought was very much on top of them at the start of the game, but it was the La Rochelle power game that came into it. And I think that, you know, I still be back Leinster. I think on their day, if it's a dry day and they've got a fit group of players there, that they will beat La Rochelle. But if, I mean, that La Rochelle pack for me is just massive, you know, and yeah, that's going to be the challenge. And, you know, John O'Gibbs, great coach, but I mean, if my mum was coaching the La Rochelle pack, I think they'd do okay, you know. And obviously with Jono's expertise and then with Rog's, you know, emotion around the game and the inspiration he brings for that team, they're going to be a tricky side. But
yeah,
as I said, I still think that Leinster have the quality and especially for what they've done yesterday to go over there and win the game.
Yeah, they have lovely balance in their game, La Rochelle. Like, obviously they have a huge pack, but their ability to move the ball and, you know, obviously when you're coming up against a big pack, you've got to tighten your line. You want to be getting two tacklers in the contact. And teams have to do that against them, but that's going to create space elsewhere, and how they exploit that space is really impressive. You know, they've got...
Hayo West,
a lovely player, lovely passer of the ball. Both their centres pass the ball really well, and then they've got seriously dangerous and strong wingers, you know, so...
Brice Toulan, obviously great signing for them. And he's had a very good season, brilliant for France.
So, no, look, it's going to be an absolute cracker game. It's probably, but like, it's hard to tell now, you know, who you want, but like, you just, it's the same for Ulster. We would have really wanted a home semi. Like, there's no two ways about it. You just go, right, get us at home. We don't mind who we're against. Going on the road, you're looking then at, you know, who do you not want to go to? And you know, La Rochelle, Toulouse were probably the two teams top of the list, and they've got La Rochelle now. So,
yeah, and then you've got, you know, Bordeaux now playing in the other semi against Toulouse after narrowly beating Racing and Jalibert knocking over that kick in the last plays of the game. And you'd have to look at that game and think that Toulouse are in a strong position to win that game. If that's a dry day, what do you reckon?
Yeah, well, I agree. I think Toulouse, you know, probably be favourites going into it, I guess. But yeah, I mean, look, we get to the semi-final stage and you're all the four very, very good teams that could all on their day beat each other. And I think out of all them, La Rochelle, if I was a Leinster, I think, well, Toulouse, yes, but La Rochelle away, it's daunting. I know we've already gone off the La Rochelle game, but the moment for me in that game with Victor Vito doing the offload, like, that shows the other side, that I guess that you have to watch everything. The other fixture, of course, it'll be interesting to watch it.
Interesting one in that, it will be Jalibert and Entomac, like the two French tens going at each other. That's going to be, you know, a sight to behold. And no, it's going to be a cracker game. Hope my old team Bordeaux get one up in them, but
of course.
Yeah, I know. It's made for a few cracking semi-finals, in fairness. Then we'll move on to the Challenge Cup. And Harlequins first and Northampton, you know, last night, 35-27 win. That Saints game, you know, I think Ulster, as I said earlier on, probably not the best performance, but they were still an awful lot better, which is probably encouraging for you guys going into a semi. Because really, I think we discussed before we came on, Chris, and you might not want to say it, Mads, but I think looking at it, you know, this is probably the best opportunity for an Ulster team to win a trophy in quite a while. They're definitely probably, in my opinion, the best team left in the competition. So it's a very exciting lead in for you guys.
Yeah, we made it clear that we were going to target this competition. You know, once we dropped down from the Champions Cup, you know, the chat from the players and the coaching staff has been, look, we're going to go full strength and we want to win it. Obviously, against Harlequins, they rotated. I think they've their eye on the Premiership, which was, you know, disappointing for the competition, but it was still a very good performance, good complete performance on the road. Against the Saints at the weekend, it was a very funny first half. You know, they get, you know, a double yellow card where, you know, both players are off for effectively the same 10 minutes. It can almost make a team a bit antsy. Like, you feel like, geez, we have to score, we have to make the most of this. You can, you know, end up forcing things a bit. And that probably happened to us. You know, we had a lot of penalty advantages that we didn't quite use as well as we should have. And, you know, Saints went into half-time 8 points up, you know, and in a cup match, that's tough going. But look, we didn't panic. We came out. It was really important for us that we scored first in that second half. you know, got a three-pointer, backed it up. And then I definitely felt from around the 60, 65-minute mark, I felt, look, it looked like to me from watching on that we had Northampton broken. We were winning all the contacts. We were putting them under big pressure. They were starting to come up with a lot of handling errors. And then the guys coming off the bench for us, like Tom O'Toole, Matty Ray, Andrew Warwick, like their carrying game ultimately for me got us over the line. Ethan McElroy on the wing was really rock solid when he came on again.
And Jacob Stockton had another big performance.
Jacob was very good again. You know, Jacob's been in great form. Obviously, like the knee injury took the wind out of his sails a bit, but like he's been brilliant since he's come back. And you know, we're very lucky to have him. He's, you know, he's a serious athlete. His left foot is invaluable for us. And you know, he carried the ball really well. Stu McCluskey had a cracker last night as well. You know, he's
Jordy man of the match. Yeah, Jordy.
Jordy's cracking.
How do you think he's? Like, he's been such a great signing for us. Like, talk about someone who's so durable. You know, now you've been captain numerous times. He's obviously respected hugely there. Like, great signing for you guys.
Yeah, Jordy's really found some form, I think. You know, maybe a few months back, he even by his own standards, would have been wanting more from himself. And I think he's been outstanding. Like, just, you know what you get from him from minute one to minute 79, never stops. And he epitomised the game for me. He's just been brilliant. And you know, it's hard for Mads, obviously playing, but for me as an Ulster now fan, I thought it was just awesome. I think like to don't underestimate going away from home with a young Ulster
team. You're
not
an Ulster fan, eh?
I'm an Ulster fan, yeah. maybe. It was all, the game had everything. Like, you know, Alan O'Connor doing that, you know, there was cracking wee front line out move where Alan O'Connor's sprinting the pitch, and someone like you know, Jordy Murphy got man of the match, but like I thought it was just a really good, you know, everyone had to dig in to win that game. It was a really good team performance. So you know, you had Alan O'Connor, Kieran Treadwell, you know, just all everyone in general like just did really well. And there's no doubt about it, the Ulster maul has been a weapon for Ulster. We've scored some really important wall tries. You know, and this is something I want to bring up with you. They now have Stuart McCluskey and Jacob coming into the malls. That's how important that the weapon is. And I mean, do you, whenever they're training, do you ever get stuck in on the other side?
We've been talking to Roddy, the forwards coach, about what we want is the back on the end of the mall, dotting it down just to get our stats up a bit. So
you take whatever you can.
It was funny, I was talking to John Andrew during the week, and we were talking about like these mall tries, and he was like, yeah, I'll give you a little tip. He's like, you know, you're back of the mall. If you stay attached and you know, dive over, score the try, it's given as a mall try. Obviously, like, you'll get it. But he goes, if you break off just before you get over, it's given as like an individual try.
Oh, no way.
It's like, yes, Johnny.
What, like, on the, I just tagged differently on the computer? Jeez.
He could get a big trouble for sharing that with you, by the way.
Is it off the stats and Ultimate Rugby? Like.
Brilliant. But no, like, as I said, like, I think that there's no doubt there's a nice, Northampton are a physical, yes, a young side, they'll get better, but Northampton away from home in Franklin Gardens, the pack had to step up. They did. Yes, it would have been nice to have maybe got ahead earlier with two yellow cards. Yeah. But I think, and an honourable mention for Billy Burns. Like, you know, he obviously had a late shot to the rib, and I think most people thought he was going to come off pretty soon. And I'm sure it was frustrating for you, Mads, having probably watching, going, right, I'm going to get in here earlier than expected. But for him to dig in, and you know, to play most of the game anyway, you know, it showed what it meant to him, and it meant to all the team. And yeah, like, I think moving forward, this is, I agree, this is the best chance that Ulster have for winning a trophy for a long time. And it would just be brilliant, because I obviously know so many of the team still there and the amount of hard work they put in. And I just hope for their sake they can now go to Leicester away.
Yeah.
Leicester away, which obviously is going to be tough, but you know, we've won there before and they can do it again.
You don't want to get too carried away now. Obviously, it's just leading to semi-finals, but it wouldn't be great for the old COVID restrictions if Ulster took the trophy. The last year that Ulster won a trophy, was it 2006. You know, it's a long wait. And listen,
don't be adding 6 years onto it. We don't need
that. Yeah,
it's not like you'd have to pull me up on it. But you know, but Ulster have been knocking on the door for many years. Whether it's finals, you know, final in the 2012 Heineken, you know, numerous semis and a few finals in the Pro 14, and really it is probably the success is kind of overdue. And it kind of sums up that, like, in, like, obviously, listen, if this does happen and you manage to get there and win it, with these you know, COVID restrictions and all the rest, you could imagine what that would be around.
Oh, with no fans.
Around Belfast and that, like if it was, you know.
Yeah, well, who knows what will happen? Things can change reasonably quickly. But yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, imagine if them, you know, if it was a full house with Ulster fans, no matter where the game was played, they travel in force. And but yeah, geez, I think every team obviously experiencing that at the moment. So
I suppose quickly as well, because those semi-finals were announced before we came in here, and you know, you touched on it briefly, I think, there, but Leicester, Ulster in Welford Road, and then you got Bath's Montpellier over in England. So should be two good games. But like, this is me, like, from a neutral side looking at it, going, like, I think Ulster are the best team left in it, really. And I think that it, like, not an easy place to go, Leicester, but you know, in terms of the way they've been playing, how inconsistently they've been playing there for quite a while, I think it's in Ulster's hands, really, that game.
Yeah, they're definitely a side, though. I know the last two seasons leading up to this year, you know, were well below Leicester's high standards that they've set over the last kind of 15, 20 years. But you can see with Borthwick, his stuff is beginning to stick. They've built a good squad now. There's some good young players coming through. You've obviously got the senior guys, the Youngs, brothers, Ford. And I thought they put in a really good performance over the weekend. They were, you know, very impressive in the last 16 game as well. You know, they've had the luxury of playing at home in both games, and they're going to have a home semi-final now. So we know we're going to be coming up against a very tough pack. And they've a dangerous back line now as well. You know,
Ferg thinks the Premiership's crap, so you're just I do think if Marty Moore and, you know, Eric O'Sullivan, if we can lay the foundation and with the line out and the scrum functioning well, I think the Ulster back line at the moment, you know, you've got Stuart McCluskey, you know, good things happen around him, and then you've got James Hume running, you know, incredible lines at the moment. I just think it's a really nice balance of a team that Ulster have at the moment. And
Rob Balakun, like, you know, he's
incredible. And the aerial battle, sorry, that's something that they didn't talk on about yesterday. Dan Bigger, obviously, known for his, like, world class looking after the backfield. Like, they always put him in the backfield to look after these high balls. You got Rob Balakun picking balls out from everywhere. Jacob Stockdale doing it. So like, that had a big
There's nothing better as an out half, knowing that, like, your winger's got his edge over his opposite man down one side, and, like, once you're not getting over the game line, you're just thinking, right, well, I'll just pump it in the air down that side, and we're going to come back with the ball, you know, four times out of five. It's and like that in the second half, that was huge for us. You know, Billy put up some cracking kicks. Rob got after them really well, either caught them clean himself or just made a mess of it, and, like, in a cup match, that's absolutely huge.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, listen, they're going to be two really exciting semi-finals to look forward to there. But we'll move on to another talking point now. So just on past experiences from what you've had, Chris, and maybe ones that have happened recently, Mads, but what is the one game that you wish you could get back? You know, whether it was something that happened you or happened the team or as a final or something. What's the one game you'd love to just get back to be able to do it all over again?
Even recently, like the Toulouse in the Champions Cup at the start of this season, it was just a game that, you know, obviously the first game of the Champions Cup is huge every year at home in the Kingspan. It was a game that I felt we were on top of for the majority. Toulouse got a bit of the breaking ball, got three or four opportunities, scored off their three or four opportunities. We had the lion's share of possession, and it's just a game that I'd love to have that one back. And it just had that feel. If it was played five times, we would have won four out of the five. They got us on the day. Now, don't get me wrong, they're a fantastic side, but that was one that I just felt, you know, really unwell afterwards. I was like, they've robbed us there. And it was, a tough one to take.
You're losing the home, the French sides, you know, at the Kingspan, it's always tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for me, one of the games I would have loved to have gone back to see, you know, a different outcome would have been the Saracens quarterfinal for Ulster in 2014 when Jarrod Payne got red carded. It happened really early in the match, I think, like, within the first sort of 4 or 5 minutes, and so we had to play the game for 14 minutes with 14 men for most of the game, and we only lost the game by about 2 points. And looking back at it, you know, I think Chris Ashton, I just remember him doing his dive and scoring, and I think Jarrod went up for the ball and a fair contest, but the Saracens fullback fell and got concussed and had to come off. And I just think, looking back, maybe a different day, you know, that it was such a small moment, had such a massive effect on us. Because we had a, you know, it was probably our Ulster strongest team in the history of the last few years. So yeah, that was a game where I think if I look back, if you could just say to Jared, just take it easy, don't go for it.
Let him cash this one. Give it to him.
I know, I remember seeing that at the time going,
that's
red. And, you know, things weren't even as hot about hitting people in the air, I think, but that one was particularly bad so early in the game. One that sticks out for me would probably be who just get it back and probably replay the second half of the game more than anything would be in 2012. We had played the final against you guys, and then the following week we had the final of the Pro 12, I think it was called at that stage, against the Ospreys. The Ospreys team would have had, like, you know, Alan Wynne-Jones obviously still there, but it would have been a very strong side. It was, you know, you had the likes of Dan Bigger and Scott Williams and Reese Webb when he was playing very well and he broke into the team.
Shane Williams
scored. So we were winning by around 7 points or so in the second half. It just unravelled for us. In fairness, in hindsight, we probably, like, we did have a big night together, you know, the after winning the final the week before, and the emotional energy of trying to get back up for a final again, along with the fatigue. They just kind of, they took us to the cleaners a little bit in the last 20 minutes. Shane Williams scored 2 tries. The one game could get back. That would probably be it, really. But
I think you can live with that, though.
Huh?
You could probably live with that. Come on.
Yeah, probably can live with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you want a few other things, so you're all right.
Yeah, but like, human beings are a bit greedy, right? Is that kind of...
You wanted 11 league wins. not content with 10.
Exactly.
Right, well, here, all right, guys. We're going to call it a day there. We'll be back after a short break.
If you haven't already done so, click subscribe on House of Rugby Ireland to never miss a show.
We're joined now by Leinster and Ireland Centre, Michelle Claffey. Great to have you with us here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome.
I'm really looking forward to it.
We're going to have to start, obviously, to talk about our own Emer Constantine and the two tries she scored. What did you make of her performance in particular yesterday?
Yeah, Emer definitely stood out. She had a really good performance by her. She got 2 tries, could have got a third one, but I think she left it babe when it went over her head. So she's definitely adding to her game as well. She kicked 4 times yesterday and a really good exit clearance kick as well. So nice to see she's adding things to her game during lockdown as well.
We'll be keeping our feet on the ground around here, don't worry anyway. But you have, like, Emer, we know that Emer has a bit of the GA background, but you do also, we believe.
Yeah, I played football years ago at this stage and kind of took it up last summer a little bit again with Offaly when I was a lot younger. And it was great to get back playing again last summer as well. It was nice to kind of segue off rugby for a little while when we couldn't play.
Yeah, for sure. We both would have played a bit of GA. I would have played GA growing up, and you, Mads,
very much so, wasn't it? Yeah, got through primary school, probably would have been my main sport, and then it was only really when I moved to Blackrock in secondary school that it took over, and you were the same in Kildare.
I would have, played with Suncroft, a little bit of Kildare Minors before I wasn't let out of boarding school to go to training, but I think there was actually a really strong kind of crossover from a lot of people that do play a lot of GAA and go across, and you can see that obviously with Emer and yourself and others. But with that Irish performance yesterday for the women and such a comprehensive victory, I mean, like, would you have seen that coming leading into the match?
I definitely would have seen the win coming, not as comprehensive as the girls achieved yesterday. Like, to score that many points and also to keep it to a nil all was incredible. But first, their fitness, they looked incredibly fit. They moved around the park. They didn't look breathless any time. There was numbers in rucks. There was numbers available out in the pitch. Like, they were moving around that pitch really well. So that's, again, Orla Curran doing incredible work there for the past number of months and even trying to keep them at that standard when there was kind of a break in games and then they're back on, but then they're off again. So even just trying to keep mentally them ticking over was brilliant. And then also their defence, to keep it nil all. Like, you don't get many clean sheets in international rugby. That's to the defensive work of Kieran Hallett. Like, he's come in there in the past year and he's worked wonders and he's implemented a system that everyone trusts and everyone believes in and are pushing forward with it.
Yeah, because Kieran actually, I would have played with Kieran at Irish under 21s actually back in the day, and Kieran came in to Leinster, I think just over a season ago, and he's helping right out with the development and academy side of things, and obviously he took up the role, but it seems like that coaching ticket there is a really strong one for the women's. It's, you know, even from talking to Emer from when she was coming in and out of here, and obviously it was massive frustration from her and the girls about the uncertainty of going forward, but what she did kind of say was just, you know, the enjoyable environment that they seem to have created.
Yeah, and he's brought like a different age of professionalism to our amateur setup. And it's a different perspective. He's living it and breathing it every day in Leinster, and then the weekends bringing it in to Irish camp. And I suppose new ideas, it's fresh ideas. And he's there like at the forefront of rugby, and Leinster are doing so well at the minute. So they're very much so have all the new ideas and everything coming through.
And Rob Sweeney's in helping with the scrums.
Yeah, Chops is brought in to work on the scrums, and that was pretty evident the weekend and how good his work has been over the past number of months. Like they won 8 scrums yesterday, didn't lose any. And then as well, they got to work on their line-out that's been working so well for them. They won 11 line-outs, they disrupted Wales, they turned over 5 of their own line-outs. So throughout that game, like every, I suppose the past number of months, they've used lockdown to kind of nail down their scrums, nail down their lineouts, get your set piece sorted. Because once that's bedded in, then you can just play off that.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. It looks like the Irish team have used that time, which, you know, it is difficult, especially when it's as extended as a year, you know, to be able to keep the structure and keep a plan in place. Like, you know, a lot of credit's got to go to the backroom team.
Yeah, and listen, a lot of credit's got to go to the girls and the squad in general. I think, you know, you could easily get frustrated, and probably, you know, the, you know, motivation is always going to get affected when your calendar's changing all over the place. And, you know, fairness, that didn't happen as much for the men, so that must have been very tough for all of you guys, just trying to, you know, stay driven. But as you say, to put that score up on Wales, but also to keep them to nil, you know, that's a great springboard going into the French game, because the French would have beaten them by around 50 points, a little bit more. So you'd imagine this French game, you know, it should be a big challenge, but it's one that we're all looking forward to, I think, after a great start for Ireland.
Yeah, you have to look at the Wales as a team before you can kind of say, well, France put this on Wales and Ireland put this on Wales. Like, Wales are in a bit of a distorted state at the minute. Like, they lost their skills coach Rachel Taylor a week before the first game against France. They lost their main scrum half player who just returned from injury, and she got injured again, so she was gone. And this is all a week before they played France, who were an excellent team. So like, Rachel Taylor had 67 caps for her country. She was captain in the 2017 World Cup. Like, what happened that she walked away? The camp, everything can't be happy in camp there, so it's probably a little bit of state of flux. But like, France took their chances, Ireland took their chances, and you got to build on that. You can't fault any Welsh team member for the effort they put into the pitch, and like, they try so hard, and everyone does, no matter what the scoreline is. No one has gone out there and not performed to the best of their abilities.
Definitely, you can only play what's in front of you as well, you know, and Ireland certainly did that. And I suppose another player, I think he ran the show very well, was Hannah Tyrrell at 10, and really that's kind of been a position for Ireland that's chopped and changed quite a while over a number of seasons. I think there's been 8 different players who've been in and out in that position. So do you think that it would be kind of positive for the team to have maybe a bit of consistency there in selection, or how would you feel about that?
So Hannah got her first start at 10 in the last game, or the last game of last year's Six Nations against Italy, and she performed quite well that day, and then she got another start here against Wales weekend, and she performed really well, and the team were taking over and it was fine. But then they switched her out and brought in their ninth out half in Stacey Flood to try and manage the game. So I think it'd be great to have Hannah play the full 80 or at least 75 there to try and get her more embedded into the game and keep that consistency, because if the players around you are trying to play off a different 10 every time, it's very difficult to get a bit of momentum. Like, what are they going to do next? Like, teams take over and teams play well when they know what their 10 wants from them. And if that's a different person, they think differently. So I think that's something that it'd be great if Hannah had stayed there, and or at least keep some form of consistency, because they have really quality 10s in the squad. So I think for a squad, from a squad point of view, they need to ensure that they keep with a 10 that the management keeps and ensures and everyone has confidence in.
Yeah, like, I think managing that rotation, but also in certain key positions, you know, people need to be kind of nailed down there for a number of games to get, like, you know, as well, better than anyone. I think we all in agreement that, you know, the halfbacks along with one or two other positions, that, like, to get up to your top form, they certainly are one of those positions you need to get.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, from the halfbacks, how they set up the team, it can be slightly different from week to week. Mm-hmm. And as you said, off a certain nine, you know, the forwards might have a certain amount of width. You know, we were talking earlier in the show about, you know, how Leinster moved the ball quickly. You could have a nine who plays a different style. How you time your run is different. It's the exact same at out half. You know, the connection you're building through the week, that builds up week to week. And, you know, as you're getting to the, you know, the third, fourth, fifth game of a competition, you've built a wealth of knowledge. If you're chopping and changing, you're just literally chopping up that wealth of knowledge, and it's not going to carry into something that can win you a competition.
Yeah, definitely. I think the standout performer again, and listen, I think that there was brilliant performance across the board, but a really exciting young talent, Bevan Parsons, with two tries, mm-hmm. and a bit of a, you know, the female kind of equivalent of a Jordan Larmer in ways, a really electric runner in that, and I'm sure you're happy to see her perform very well.
Oh, she was class. Unbelievable. Her first try, I think it got the Irish team got a solid performance or a solid platform from the scrum on the right-hand side. Great control at the back of the scrum by Junior, and you can just see the want to get that ball out to that left wing. She was nearly tackled by a winger, Wilkins, who earned her 50th cap, tried to come across to stop her, and it was like she wasn't even there. Hmm. They even accelerated into that contact, continued on through, and I've just watched her eyes or her body language. She is focused on that try line. She's actually focused on the post. Like, she is going.
White line fever. She's not passing to anyone.
She is not passing.
She's between Emer kicking it away and Bevan running herself. I don't know if anyone else is going to pass on that team.
But, like, no one's actually going probably near Bevan at this stage, so she's gone that far. Like, she is some speed and she's some talent.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, after you've been in camp over the past year and that, what's it been like having those sevens players in the mix? How do you feel that the integration there has been?
Yeah, like, there's always been a consistent flow of seven players into the 15s squad, because it's women's sevens and 15s, all one programme. It's interesting to see how they attack, how they defend. It's a different game, and I suppose they have to integrate into us and we have to integrate into how they attack as well, and you kind of have to run off them. They bring a wealth of knowledge from the sevens arena, and their skills are quite good. Like, they're there in the shop window with the IRFU on a daily basis. Yeah. They're there running through their video analysis. They have the ability to get extra skills in because they're there. They're basically our full-time professionals because they're paid to play rugby. And yes, the sevens circuit is on at the minute, but they're still in doing the sevens training. There's still a squad of girls there who are available to play sevens whenever it may return. And then because there's some crossover to 15s, they've come in, they've been involved in internal games as well. So it's not good for a squad to be training with 27 people there. So by buffering up the squad with the extra sevens players coming in, you have 30 players there, 32 players there. So it's 15 against 15. So, like, when you're attacking against
a
team, when you're attacking against a team that's 12, you're like, oh, this is great. It's anything that's unopposed as well.
Fall in love with yourself very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Like, not that that's ever happened. I'm like, you're on the ground in a rock or something. So, like, it's very easy to think that you're class. So by bolstering up the squad with the sevens girls, it's great to get bodies in the pitch, just to try and establish, well, where is the space? What are we trying to do? What are we trying to manipulate?
Even for the competitiveness in training, 100%. It's crucial. You need to be, you know, if you're the second choice guy or girl, there's nothing better going head to head 15 on 15 and getting the better of them and going, I'm going to do it again the next day. And suddenly there's a bit of movement then between the perceived seconds and the first. If you don't have that with 15 on 15 and it's 15 on 12, it just doesn't have the competitiveness in training. Yep.
And, like, give me my shot. Like, I want to get this chance. Absolutely. Like, I want to take on my opposite number. I want to get this going. I want to show that, actually, I'm not second choice. I'm actually rivaling for the first choice here. And that's what extra players brought in. They push everyone on. They make everyone better because you want to play. So that's what they bring.
I think the seven system, in fairness, you know, has been worth its weight in gold in a way for both the men's, I think, and the women's, really, because, you know, some of the guys that have come through in the men's have been, you know, outstanding talents once they've kicked on. You've got, like, you know, Shane Daly then, you know, in Munster and you know, in Leinster, you've got the likes of Will Connors and Jimmy O'Brien, Hugo Keenan now, you know, mainstay on the team, and they went through that system. I think you can see from the women as well, the ones that have that little exposure and then they merge back in, it seems to have been really positive.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, you'd want kind of maybe a talent ID officer rather than just taking a girl from a 15 setup and then putting her into a 7 setup and then taking her out of the 7 setup and putting her back into 15s. Like if there was a talent ID officer coordinator for the ages of 17 to 23, that could be much more beneficial, or like a development squad or a development tournament there to help these girls transition to. Like Bavin was playing under 18 in 2018. She was outside centre for Connacht and she scored 3 tries in the final for them to win that game, one of which was like a run the length of the pitch, something she's completely used to these days. So like if you have a programme there in order to enable her to get better at a 15s player rather than just be put into a 7 set up to learn the 7s, and the strength and condition involved in that game is very different. You have to be much more lean. You have to be able to move a lot more. There's a lot more space. So I think it's a different kind of speed as well that's need in it. There's not as space on it, as much space on a 15s pitch as a 7s. You kind of look up and go, there's 30 bodies.
Is 7s something that you'd like to see come in to schools in maybe like the last term of school, you know, in boys or girls schools? Do you think it's...
I think it's a nice introduction to rugby as overall, because it's not the technicality of a line-out, of a scrum, or what positions you have to play. It's just
if you don't have the physicality as well, it can be quite a good intro. You know, for certain girls, they... Obviously, you're talking about Bavin there as an example, but like she obviously kicked on early-ish, but there was probably a stage that where she was so talented, but probably not physically as strong as the other girls as well. And I think it can be that process can be a good one to kind of ease them in.
Yeah, and it's like that. It's not as many people on the pitch, so the space is there. So there's an ability for them to run into the gaps, run into the space and identify it. I think that's one key thing to build in the 15s game, is that it's heads-up rugby. And in 7s, you need to look heads-up and see where is the space. And to bring that aspect from 7s to 15s could be very helpful towards them building on to move on to 15s.
For sure. And who else impressed you for the Irish team? Because I know, listen... Everyone could fall a bit guilty of just talking about try scores and this and that. I know the two girls got 2 each, but a lot of hard work went in around the park. You're saying the scrum went great. Who else impressed you for Ireland?
Dorothy Wall, hands down. She's playing 6. She made 8 tackles. She's second highest metres gained on the pitch. She's a wrecking ball. She thinks she's the highest number of tackles, 24 tackles over the game. Yeah. You want to get that girl on the ball and you want that girl to be in that defending challenge as well. I think she's one of the prime examples that came through the player pathway from Fetters girls rugby right through. She represented Munster underage, senior, and then into the 7s and 15s programme as well. And she's just been a talent.
Well, what do you think that, you know, after such a positive day at the office for Ireland, what do you think they need to get right to beat France?
Reduce the penalty count. I definitely think reduce the penalty count and then hold on to the ball without getting turned over a couple of times there. I don't know if the late arrivers or if people weren't as effective at the breakdown. They need to come in, they need to clear out that player, get rid of the threat, or else maybe it's the person who's presenting the ball needs to work a bit harder on the ground. Because what enabled Ireland to score their tries in the first 30-35 minutes was that quick ball. It was quick ball, goal ball. They turned it like it was 1-2-3 gone. Because they're so fit, they're getting set early. So because they're fit, you need quick ball. And if the rucks are slow, it slows everything down. It takes momentum out of it. And you can see there, even from Emma's try, her second one like was quick ball. She was there and she hit the line flat and she was through that gap. So Emer's good at identifying the space or the gap for herself and picking out a few mismatches. And like she was
going herself and not passing.
Kicking the ball away then. If she's taking everything out of the ball, she's not going to score. She'll kick it.
She did look to pass in fairness. And it was like a dummy pass.
She
like,
was never passing that ball. You're joking me.
No, don't you worry. We'll keep her feet right in the ground today.
I think the celebration picture is one that will never be left down.
Yeah, true. She was loving that. But in fairness, listen, we're delighted to see it back on again, and it's just great to see that they kicked off in such style. So fair play to them. Wish them, you know, certainly best of luck going into the following week. I'm going to touch on another quick point here. Just going back to the men's and get both your opinion on the Rainbow Cup, which looks like it's been pulled now. So obviously there were, you know, a lot of talk about the Rainbow Cup and another competition with this kind of strange season that's gone on. Uncertain times, I know, but frustrating that this is finished. But really, on paper, was that ever going to go ahead?
Yeah, like, I think they've fallen, at the last hurdle. I think the plan was for them to get set up in Bristol. And now, with the quarantine with the UK, it doesn't look like it's worked out. But from my perspective and from Ulster's perspective, it's very frustrating. You know, we've gone through, I think, 2/3 of a league season we've lost two games, we haven't made the playoffs, and now what was supposed to be the Rainbow Cup and a new competition, you know, I'm not too sure what's going to happen now. So it is definitely turned into a bit of a mess. Hopefully, you know, the Pro 14 can salvage something, whether it's a, you know, an Inter-Pro series or, you know, a kind of hybrid competition for maybe eight games to see us through to till the end of June. But look, there's no getting away from it that it is a bit of a mess now.
Yeah, I think that Inter-Pro idea would actually be a good one. I don't know, because I think it's as safe as you can get, really. And, yeah, you know, there's be a huge appetite within the country, you know, and probably from beyond as well. If you've got, you know, Connacht, Ulster, Munster, Leinster, and, you know, fixtures away, home, you know, and have a little trophy at the end of it. Yeah. I think it would be certainly be better than nothing.
Yeah, because even at Christmas time, you have your interprovincial games, they're mostly then, but after the year that's been and the amount of games that have been played, you'd love to see a little bit more interprovincial derbies between the various teams, just to see what they get from it. But also you can bring new players through and start kind of blending them back into the squad. Not Leinster need to do that. They've done enough with their 50-odd players so far this season. But even to give more people more game time and just, like, you've been training all year for it, so why not have more games? And a domestic competition makes more sense.
The only stumbling block I can see with that would be, like, you know, what would the two Scottish teams do? What would the two Italian teams do? Mm-hmm. Like, they can't just go and play each other, you know, six head-to-head games. Like, the Welsh teams could arguably do an Inter-Pro series, but it's keeping everyone happy in the league. It might be slightly challenging, but certainly from an Irish perspective, it's something that the players would love, and I think the supporters would
enjoy. Let the Italians and Scots worry about that as well. Nice one, guys. Well, cheers, guys, and cheers to everybody for watching and listening. A big thanks to producer Pat Paul, Anthony Dermid, and everyone that helped getting the show together. This is House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.